Welcome to Talking Politics. I'm AJ Feather. This week, we have a preview on the upcoming midterm elections from Professor Terry Smith of Columbia College. Then we'll hear from Marshall Griffin on Tom Schweik's race for auditor that some say has become a race for governor.
It has been a long time since an election in Missouri had this little drama. For the first time since 1998, there is not a U.S. Senate race. The sole statewide race for auditor features a Republican incumbent who has no Democratic opposition. None of the eight congressional races is seriously competitive, thanks to gerrymandering that took place in 2011. There are some interesting state legislative races, including three locally. More about them in a minute. This election in Missouri and nationally feels like everyone is drawing a deep breath to prepare for the great battle to come in 2 years. Whether or not Republicans take control of the U.S. Senate, I wouldn't bet against it. The political posturing and gamesmanship will be ferocious. Here are only a few of the questions that the 2014 election will not answer, but may give hints about. How will Hillary Clinton leverage President Obama's lame duck status, about as lame as a president has been since Dwight Eisenhower in the late 1950s? Will any serious Republican presidential candidates emerge from the 2014 campaign? Who in Missouri can beat Chris Koster for governor? Will Republicans continue to dominate the state legislature while losing elections for statewide office? Will the Supreme Court continue to loosen the restrictions on campaign giving and spending? But these issues are down the road. In a couple of weeks, we will see if Republicans can keep a veto-proof majority in the Missouri House. Three local races will help determine that, so I'll conclude with more questions. Can Caleb Rowden hold off his challenger in the competitive 44th District? Can Gracia Backer reclaim her old seat in Callaway County, if only for one more term? Can John Wright's self-financed campaign get him reelected in the 47th District? Democrats sure hope so. They have big plans for Representative Wright. Democrats have some gusty political headwinds to fight in this election, but Republicans are famous for snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. I'll be back next week with more thoughts and predictions about this, maybe not so boring after all, election. This is Terry Smith.
Libertarian nominee Sean O'Toole brought it up during a sit-down interview in September, saying that Tom Schweik is actually running for governor.
Well, he raised over $300,000 last quarter. He has co-chairs of his campaign, Jim Talent and John Danforth. That's a lot of firepower to put up against me.
And against your Constitution Party candidate and against a blank space for Democrat?
Correct.
The same question was raised during the 2010 auditor's race by incumbent Susan Monti, a Democrat. Schweik pledged at the time that if elected, he would serve a full 4-year term as state auditor. He won the contest and he kept that promise, but he's not renewing it this time around.
All I'll say is that when it comes to future elections, the party needs to run the strongest candidate, and no one will really know the answer to that question until after November.
Most political observers in Missouri are expecting Schweik to seek the Republican nomination for governor in 2016. For now, Schweik says he's focusing on winning a second term as state auditor.
You take elections one at a time. It's the worst political mistake somebody can make to be talking about future elections when you haven't won the one that's coming up. So I've done what I should do. I'm releasing a lot of audits. I'm campaigning very hard for re-election, and right now I'm focused entirely on that election.
Despite having no major party challenger, Schweik has been making campaign stops across Missouri between now and Election Day, and broadcast ads have already begun airing. He has also been sending out numerous brief campaign statements via Twitter for several weeks. The Missouri Ethics Commission's website shows that he had raised more than $1.6 million as of early August. His campaign committee says it raised more than $234,000 during the third quarter of this year and had just over $1.2 million on hand as of September 30th. In Jefferson City, I'm Marshall Griffin.
There have been increased calls for police officers to wear body cameras in the wake of several recent high-profile police shootings, including the one in Ferguson. And many police departments have looked to Columbia, where officers began wearing cameras while interacting with the public in July. But as Bram Sable-Smith from KBIA's Civics Desk reports, early adoption of new technologies also means troubleshooting potential problems in their implementation.
Last year, Assistant Chief John Gordon of the Columbia Police Department assembled a panel of officers. Their aim was to research cameras that could be worn by all of the officers in the department.
They ranged in years of experience. Obviously, we had males and females on the panel. And then we also had different heights, because when you wear a body-worn camera, you wouldn't think about it, but height has an element to it because of the way the lens works on the camera.
Actually, there's a lot to think about when it comes to evaluating officer-worn body cameras. How wide is the lens? What's its battery life? And even, when is the camera recording? Gordon says that last question was particularly important in his panel's decision to choose a camera made by Taser International.
What sold us on the Taser camera was 30-second pre-event buffering. The camera is always recording. It's always capturing the first 30 seconds before the officer actually turns on the camera, and that we found to be invaluable downtown.
So the department purchased more than 100 cameras from Taser. Now, whenever a Columbia police officer makes contact with a citizen,
112 Columbia arrival,
the officer must activate their body camera that records the entire interaction.
Activating the body camera.
Exiting the patrol car.
Columbia police officers work in 12-hour shifts, and with multiple interactions per shift, the cameras create a large amount of data every day. How to store that data is one of the biggest questions camera providers must answer. And many companies, including Taser, are looking to the cloud, which stores digital data across several physical locations and makes it remotely accessible from pretty much anywhere.
The beauty of using the cloud is that by using the cloud, you're not overwhelmed by this tsunami of digital information.
Steve Tuttle is Vice President of Strategic Communications for Taser International. He says using Taser's cloud service called Evidence.com is simple. Officers place their cameras in a recharging station at the end of their shifts, and the video is automatically uploaded via an encrypted file.
It also allows you to share that information with district attorneys and other people, and it keeps an accounting of who's seen the video and who's documented any other digital data with that.
Entire case files can be created in the system, but the service isn't cheap. A review of the 3-year contract signed between the Columbia Police Department and Taser International shows the cost of the cameras, including warranty, totals approximately $50,000, a one-time payment. Gordon says at the moment, Taser presents the best available option. There'll be a chance to reevaluate when the contract is up in 3 years. For KBIA News, I'm Bram Sablesmith.
That's all for Talking Politics this week. Thanks for joining us. I'm AJ Feather.